morning. You're listening to 88.7 WHCL-FM, Clinton, New York. I'm your host, Pete Bianco. This show is titled The Ringer, and my guest this morning is Dr. Philip Malika. Thank you, Dr. Malika, for joining us.
Glad to be here.
I have a lot of curiosity about dental health, and after watching you give a presentation to the IAOMT, it seems like you're the person to talk to about this.
No, I appreciate that.
Can we start out by talking about what causes dental caries or cavities?
Well, basically, dental cavities or caries is really an infection, specifically, you know, attacking the dentition itself or the teeth itself, the structure of the tooth. The infection itself it becomes embedded in the enamel itself, creates its own ecological environment, and then spreads through the enamel into the dentin. And hopefully the dentist can intercept it before it spreads to the nerve area, which would create all kinds of difficulties for the patient. So it is an infection.
So do the teeth have a natural ability to fend off this infection? And if so, then what can compromise that?
Well, you know, teeth do have the capability of healing. You know, we lecture about that, which is amazing. In dental school, you're taught, well, you know, caries or decay gets into the tooth, that's it. But teeth do have the capability to heal themselves, and that's all based on the ecology of the oral cavity. And once again, it's what nutritionally what you put in your mouth and what your general, you know, your general ecology is, how the environment of the mouth is. Is it alkaline? Is it acid? So really it's an environmental issue, and you know, keeping a good ecology and good, well-balanced nutrition is really a major factor in the control of decay itself. And keeping your teeth clean, that's the bottom line. Keep your teeth clean, you know, you won't have these issues.
Now, I remember seeing in your lecture that you had talked about three things that you try to encourage in the patient, and one is probiotics, the other was enzymes, and I forgot what the third one was.
Well, I think, you know, probably the third one. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, we talk about the model of dentistry where we're looking at. It's really what we call integrative biologic dental medicine. So we're really looking at the patient beyond the even the oral cavity. That's why when we're talking about probiotics, well, what probiotics? That's good microflora. You know, we're trying to keep our immune system functioning because where does the immune system live? In the gut. Where does the gut live? It starts in your oral cavity and works its way, well, you know where it ends, of course.
Right.
So we use a combination of probiotics to keep a good flora, enzymes to help digest food, support our digestive tract, and once again, it boils down to, you know, keeping the oral cavity nice and clean. And that's, you know, part of the patient's commitment, you know, as the team approach to this type of dentistry.
And when you talked about the pH of the mouth, is there a ways for people to monitor their pH that if they get to a certain point, they may be concerned that decay will be following that?
Well, the interesting thing is that the mouth itself, or oral cavity, it naturally runs more alkaline. And it's part of it's an interesting defense mechanism that the body goes through. You know, the oral cavity starts, once again, as alkaline. Higher pH. And the rationale behind that is that there are two enzyme systems in the oral cavity. One is for breaking down fats and one's for breaking down sugar. And enzymes, of course, are pH dependent. So we start out as an alkaline environment and those enzymes are functioning correctly. And then, of course, we shift to a lower pH in the stomach. So it's kind of a defense mechanism plus also digestive function. Well, what's important is, I mean, it's as simple as actually getting soil pH testing strips that you can get, you know, anywhere, a little scientific place, and you can test your pH. I mean, it's interesting. You know, you can test your oral cavity for the pH, make sure that's alkaline. And, of course, you know, a simple test, biologic test, is testing the pH of your urine. How much acid are you producing as a byproduct of metabolism?
And so what would be the range that you'd be looking for the mouth, and what would be the range that you'd be looking for in the urine of pH?
Well, in the oral cavity, you know, we're looking at something, you know, like 6.8, 7.0, which is almost kind of neutral. It's, well, you know, it's more alkaline. You know, when you drop down into the areas of, you know, 5 or so, your whole body is really shifting, and it's a reflection. You know, on the urine, I mean, it can, you know, we tend to be a little bit more acidic down there. People try to alkalinize themselves like crazy. We're all doing all kinds of things. But usually the urine pH is running 5, you know, 5.0, 5.2, around that area. And it's really, you know, you're eliminating organic acids, which, once again, is a byproduct of normal metabolism.
And so if the oral cavity is in an acidic environment, what types of things can a person do to help to balance that?
Well, first of all, go see your dentist and you know, have a thorough examination. Is it a localized event, or does it reflect the situation that's representative of your ecology on a whole? If it's a localized event, you'll see a drop in pH associated with some form of infection. That could be periodontal disease. It could be infection deep in the bone, or it could be just, you know, decay in general. Because you remember, the pathology, those kind of bugs that, you know, really work us over and deteriorate us really love acidic environments. They hate oxygen, and they love acid. So they're trying to create an ecological niche that's favorable to them. So those are the type of things you look for. And then, if it, you know, you eliminate infection, you have a relatively healthy oral cavity, per se, you know, it might be more of a generalized ecology issue.
Now, I know that you work extensively with ozone, and one thing that was really exciting to me was to see that there was even bone regrowth using ozone, or osteogenesis. And you had talked about the ozone manipulating pH. So how can we go from the pH to ozone in the conversation?
Well, when you roll into the ozone issue, once again, it rolls back. When we're incorporating oxygen ozone therapy in dentistry, what we're really doing, once again, is we're trying to eliminate the infection. And ozone has a multiplicity of positive effects, especially in the oral cavity and the body as a whole. Number one, it's going to eliminate the infection. That's for sure, because the commonality of all these bug forms that tend to hurt us, what we call pathogenic forms, have one commonality, which is fantastic. They have what's called very weak antioxidant systems in their cell membranes, which is their skin. So when we use ozone therapy, it's an oxidative therapy, so we're stressing them. So no matter what, they have no resistance to this type of therapy, we kill them. And by doing that, number one, we're changing the ecology, but the side effects of ozone also are better circulation, upregulation of the immune system, all the fundamental physiologic and biologic effects that your body does in a positive fashion become what's called upregulated, start to function. So you eliminate the infection, you start getting better circulation, better immune function, you're going to have the ecology is going to shift into a more favorable environment for the patient itself. So this is where, once again, ozone comes into play. Plus, also, ozone tends to alkalize the area and the body itself.
And is that locally or systemically that it alkalinizes?
Well, once again, it depends on your approach with the ozone. But, you know, you start to eliminate these acidic areas within the body, it's going to have far-reaching implications. You know, when we lecture, we always talk about in this model of dentistry, you know, I always say we are but what, you know. We are one being. You know, we tend to break things up into little pieces to understand them better in the human body. But the reality is we're but one being. And, you know, wherever we work, the influences far reach the entire body. So these have positive implications throughout the entire system. Now, if you take an integrative approach, if you tend to run more acidic, and, you know, say, oh, you know, the big thing today is I want to alkalinize. Well, what are we alkalinizing when we're talking about that? You know, we want to say alkalinize, it prevents cancer, it does a multiplicity of positive things for us. Well, excuse me, the reality is what we're trying to do is, first of all, you cannot alkalinize your blood, okay? The blood has to maintain its pH at the cost of everything. This is where you see osteoporosis, all these different issues coming up. The body trying to maintain its blood pH. Well, what are we trying to alkalize? Well, when we do that, and you know, through nutrition, you know, green drinks, et cetera, we're actually trying to alkalize the tissue or the matrix that holds us together, the glue that holds us together. By, you know, alkalizing the tissue itself, we function at a much, much higher level. So we're not alkalizing the blood, but we're trying to alkalize the tissue itself through good hydration, simple things like putting some lemon in some water, and good exercise, and good fundamental nutrition. Watch what you're eating. Certain foods produce more acid, some don't.
And that was another question I had for you is with the lemon. Now, I think of lemon as something that's acidic, but it helps to alkalinize the body when it's diluted in water?
Yeah, I mean, this is what, you know, the first time I heard about it, I said, wait a minute, lemon, citric acid, but it actually has the opposite effect. I mean, the body incorporates it and starts an alkalinization process, and it's a very gentle alkalinization process. If you want to shift your pH, and it's a process, you know, people do all kinds of crazy things at times to shift their pH. It's a process. When you're thinking about, you know, holistic medicine and integrative medicine, these are processes. It's not like popping a pill, I feel better. It's a process for wellness, and it takes time. And something as simple as lemon water, drink, you know, having more green type of vegetables, et cetera, will slowly shift the body in a more favorable fashion.
Now, when you talked about positive charges and negative charges for remineralizing or recrystallizing bone structure, you talked about that in relation to acidity or alkalinity. So how do electrical charges relate to pH?
Well, listen, we are electrical beings. And the interesting thing, flipping to the ozone to kind of bring it into the conversation again, ozone or oxygen ozone, which is a combination, is the only gas that carry an electrical charge, and it carries a negative electrical charge. Inflammation, infection, these type of environments are very positively charged, very acidic. So that's the beauty of using oxygen ozone, where the ozone actually travels into these areas and neutralizes this very acidic environment. And when we look at infection deepening within the jaws, whether it's from a root canal, bad extraction, whatever the case may be, these are very acidic, positively charged environments, very inflamed. And this is where ozone comes into play, where it neutralizes that, number one, eliminates the infection, but also, once again, as we spoke, we're shifting that pH. Now, an indication of wellness or health returning to the bone is we start to see remineralization. Now, why is that? Well, the minerals that form the matrix of the bone, the crystal part, is also positively charged. So, you know, when you have an infection that's positively charged, minerals that were once there are positively charged. A big indicator of success in infection elimination and environmental change in the bone is when we start to see remineralization. That means those minerals, the positively charged minerals, can flow back into the area, and we have eliminated the infection itself.
So does that mean that when the tissue state is then in a basic level, then it carries a negative charge? Is that right?
When it's in a negative state? Repeat that again.
If the tissue state has a negative charge, does that mean that it's in a recrystallizing kind of a place?
Well, yeah, it's in a more, slightly, you know, once again, it's all based on pH, which represents, you know, a little bit of a negative charge. That allows for those positively charged crystals to come in. It's a better state of health, a better state of pH, and better state of health in that bone area. Good blood flow, once again, allows that to come in. And that's the other interesting little quick point about oxygen ozone, which is amazing, is that a byproduct of exposure to oxygen ozone is what's called nitric oxide. And nitric oxide is really a messenger, but the also important point about nitric oxide is it opens up all the blood flow in the area. Years ago, there used to be a thing they used to call endothelial-derived relaxation factor, which is, whoa, what is that? Well, it was some kind of chemical that used to open up the blood vessels, let better blood flow.
Uh-huh.
But now they've discovered it was nitric oxide, and a byproduct of the ozone is nitric oxide. That's the beauty of it. Good blood flow in, good blood flow out. That allows for healing to affect.
So something would cause the blood vessels to constrict, and this ozone or the nitric oxide actually allows them to open back up.
Exactly. What happens is on these vascular beds, you know, you're talking about the very smallest blood vessels, they tend to become congested and collapse back on themselves when you're having these deeper set type of infections. Because once again, it boils back to ecology. The environment's changing. These blood vessels have become constricted. There's not enough good information in. No blood flow. Those little capillaries tend to collapse back. And you can see, you know, what we call, you know, a lot of congestion in these areas. And the congestion is blood flow, plus also lymphatics, which is, you know, the pathway for your immune system come in. So the system starts to shut down and roll back on itself, and it's like a snowball just rolling along. And, you know, you have to do these interceptive therapies to reverse that whole biologic process and allow the body to heal itself. And that's the fundamental thing, is that the different way of thinking in integration is we're supporting the body or supporting the patient's own natural healing processes, because ultimately, you know what? Only the patient can truly heal themselves.
Mm. There's a product called Novamin for remineralizing teeth. How does that work, or are you familiar with that product?
Well, these are all, you know, like kind of phosphate-based type of remineralization. It's like there's different ones out there. There's Capasol. There's all different types of remineralization products. Listen, the saliva can remineralize. But the issue with, let's say if you're talking about decay itself, I mean, once again, exposure to ozone, once again, you know, eliminates the infection, changes the ecology, and allows those minerals to get in. You could do remineralization all day, but if you have an active infection, once again, you're talking about a positive environment. Those minerals can't get in. So it's an ecological shift that will allow those minerals to get in and do remineralization, which we do with in combination with oxygen ozone.
So if you have a cavity, and I've seen images on the Internet of people who've reversed the decay process and got secondary dentin to form, could you use a combination of ozone to sterilize and get the infection, change the environment, and then something like the Novamin to help the body to remineralize it?
Absolutely. And that's really the trick, because, once again, you know, you have to have an oxidizing agent that, number one, eliminates the infection, and ozone does that with decay on teeth. And then, once again, you're changing the ecological niche in that little area, and allowing for those minerals to come in. Studies were done where they use remineralizing paste, like MI paste, all different types of stuff. But once again, even the saliva, if the environment's correct, the natural minerals will flow back in and remineralize the decay itself, which is fantastic. I mean, you know, this is one of the wonderful things about teeth, the concept of healing teeth. You know, typically, you know, you have a cavity, sometimes that decay itself spreads very close or near the nerve. And traditionally, the infection's there, we're going to wind up with a root canal. But the beauty today is that by ozonating that cavity preparation, that design, even if there's a slight little bit of decay there versus exposing the nerve itself, you can ozonate it. The tooth is now clean and sterile. It will remineralize from the inside out, and you restore it, and the tooth is fine. Hey, no root canal. How beautiful is that?
Excellent. I've heard people talk about using ozone for sensitive teeth. Does the ozone block the dentinal tubules?
You know, I just got back this past weekend in Dallas from the second meeting of the American Academy of Ozone Therapy, and a friend of mine, Charles Rufinek,
can you
in California.
Can you hold that thought? I'm sorry, but I've got another call, and I'd like to, I'm sure they have a question for you.
Sure.
So that'd be fine? Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Okay, sorry we lost you there. The caller's question is that their gum is separated from the bone, and is this something that the ozone can help with?
Well, yeah, of course. It's all dependent on, you know, what's causing that gum to separate from the bone. Number one, you know, usually it's a situation of infection. So the first thing you do is eliminate the infection, and ozone can do that. We love using ozone when it deals with periodontal disease and soft tissue, because the response is so fantastic. It really, number one, eliminates the infection and changes the environment and allows the patient to heal themselves. But once again, the patient has to do their homework, too, by keeping everything very clean in between treatments.
And in that case, are you using the ozonated gas or an ozonated oil?
We're using a combination. The thing about when we do periodontal disease or soft tissue, we're kind of using all the aspects of ozone, where, you know, using ozonated water, we're using ozonated oil, we're actually using ozone gas. We actually bubble gas down into those little pockets around the gums themselves. And the beauty of ozone, we can actually inject it into the soft tissue itself and help heal the tissue that way. So we use all our little techniques of ozone combined together to treat the patient for those soft tissue problems.
And so I've seen the oil being used in the gum pockets, and I've seen how you guys make a tray that goes around the teeth. But I'm not sure when it is that you choose to use it as a water, ozone and water.
Well, ozone in water, we use a tremendous amount of ozone, ozonated water. Interesting thing about when you ozonate water, we use number one distilled water. And when you ozonate water, water has the capacity to incorporate ozone and oxygen into itself. And when you bubble that to create that ozonated water, we're actually making what's called wetter water. And water, of course, is the universal solvent, so we're washing things. So it's always important, you know, once again, if you're dealing with periodontal disease, per se, we're dealing, the first thing we have to deal with is whatever type of infection is in there. And the infection lives in this beautiful world called biofilm. And biofilm is a big jelly where all these different type of life forms live. And, you know, we really need to understand what really lives in there, because a lot of times if you want to grow it, it's already gone. So we always use ozonated water as the universal solvent, wet water, to rinse out all the biofilm and get down to the basic tissue itself. Because, you know, you go in there, you start cleaning up these gums right away, you can create what's called bacteremia. You know, you can spread that bacteria through the whole body. So ozonated water, we use it for our root canals, periodontal disease, rinsing cavities, cleaning surfaces. It has a tremendous disinfectant property. And, you know, there's no toxicity or side effects from it. It's a beautiful thing.
You were speaking about that breaking down. I heard you also talk about, what is it called, terracaine? What's the Novocaine that you use that starts with a P?
Oh, Procaine.
Procaine, thank you. And is that the same as Novocaine?
No, it's really different. Procaine was actually developed, believe it or not, back in years ago in Germany as a substitute for the use of cocaine. Cocaine was widely used in medicine at that time, and, of course, it created some issues. So Procaine was developed. And the interesting thing about Procaine, it's really one of the few, quote-unquote, really anesthetics that was developed for longevity medicine. But we use it to get the patient a little bit numb. But also the beauty about Procaine is a couple of things. Number one, it carries the same electrical charge as what's called resting cell membrane. That means it kind of stabilizes and relaxes all the healthy tissue. Plus also the beauty of it, when it breaks down to its constituent components, it actually breaks down to vitamin Bs. And so there's no, you know, toxicity or weird side effects associated with that. So people with allergies, environmentalness, we can easily use Procaine, and that really helps the healing process. And also, it's nice to get the patient a little bit numb once in a while.
Now, you also had talked about eliminating infection radiographically, and I just didn't know what that meant.
Eliminating what again? Repeat that.
Oh, eliminating infection radiographically.
Well, I don't know if we're eliminating infection radiographically, but, you know, today, when we look at radiographs, I mean, that's really, once again, the hallmark of how we evaluate how the therapies are working. And the things that we look at today, which is amazing in dentistry, is what's called 3D coping, three-dimensional radiology. And this is a way for us to actually physically, you know, travel into the bone, look in and around the teeth themselves. Because it's amazing with this new technology where we can look physically into the bone on different angles, that we find very interesting infections, especially around old root canals. So we can measure, once again, you know, how much healing is going on, where these little stealthy infections are, and it gives a sense of how the body's functioning.
Is there any technology currently to image the teeth using sonograms?
Well, there used to be, it's called a Cavitat, but that technology is pretty much outdated right now. I'm not familiar using any kind of, you know, sonogram at this particular point with dentition. Like I said, the greatest technology right now is three-dimensional visualizing. And also, we use a new type of technology for decay detection, and it's based on, ultraviolet radiation from the dentition itself. It's a cold spectra system. So we can actually look at the teeth without x-rays and see the extent of the decay on the teeth themselves, which is very nice.
And that's using an ultraviolet system?
Yeah, basically it's an ultraviolet system at a certain wavelength, and the bacteria that cause decay give off this gas called pyrroles, and it's able to detect those. So that was one of the studies we just completed. You know, we've had studies before that said, oh, decay is eliminated or arrested by using ozone, and we ran studies, again, just to prove that fact. And the beauty of it is there's a certain color imaging associated with it that we can really analog and also measure. And that was very, very successful. And it's a nice way to see, the extent of the decay and anticipate what's coming up.
I heard you talk about the work of Titchener when it comes to the body being an electric, our bodies have an electric component to them. I was wondering if you could tell me if there's any books by Titchener, or how do I learn more about Titchener?
Well, Titchener, matter of fact, I was just, before you called me, putting together all the examination questions. We run a biologic dental school, and we have a board exam coming up, so the Pissinger, the questions were coming up. Yeah, there's a great book by Alfred Pissinger called The Extracellular Matrix and Ground Regulation. And the amazing work with that is that it really is the foundation for all alternative, holistic, integrative medicine. And what the story is about that is that our body is really made up of this extracellular matrix. You know, when, blood flow comes into these areas, these tissues, I mean, the little capillary just doesn't rub up against the cell and say, oh, here's some oxygen, here's some food. There's a space in between the blood vessels itself, the capillaries, and the tissue, and that's called the matrix, the extracellular matrix. And it's really an amazing, highly regulated area that allows the exchange of gas, nutrition, and metabolic byproducts going back and forth within the body. It really is the glue that holds us together. Now, with this matrix, if you take everything away except the matrix itself, you'd have a perfect form of your body. So it really is the fabric that holds us and communicates our body as one.
Wow. Well, that sounds worth reading. You also talked about Otto Warburg and anaerobiosis.
Well, this is interesting. All the work that we do and the foundation for even cancer therapies today are based on Otto Warburg's work back in the 30s and 40s. Otto Warburg was a two-time Nobel Prize winner. And he's the first one that discovered and explained that cancer is a fermentation process. Mm. That is, improper utilization of oxygen induces the cancer. And he gave some fundamental concepts that way. And this is where the foundation for diseases is that with the improper use of oxygen, utilization of oxygen, which is fundamental to metabolism, we get a shift into a different ecology we call anaerobiosis, which is lack of use of oxygen properly. And this is where we see the manifestation, what we call disease today. So Otto Warburg, two-time Nobel laureate, knew the foundations of cancer issues back in the early 30s.
Is there a particular book on his work, or is it only in scientific studies that you'll find his work?
Yeah, you have to go into the scientific studies, and one of the best ways to do that is to, one of the fundamental things, which is good, go back, go online, and go into speeches given by Nobel laureates, and you can go back to his dissertation on his Nobel Prize, and that would give you a beautiful look at some of the fundamental work that he has done. And it was interesting that he received his first Nobel Prize, and then the second one, he was forbidden to leave Germany to get the second one during the Nazi regime at that time. But go online, and you can find out Warburg's work, foundation for everything we do today.
Now, is it his work that relates to the ATP levels?
Well, yeah, when you think about it, ATP, it was his student, Hans Krebs, that came up with the Krebs cycle. So it's all linked in to fundamental metabolism. We're not using oxygen correctly, and, in the Krebs cycle, you need oxygen to burn because we pull energy out of food by using an oxidative pathway, pulling electrons. And that's the fundamental of life, is pulling electrons out, transfer of electricity. That's what it's all about.
So just to cross over a little bit here, for people who have something like a fibromyalgia or I forgot what the other one is, but where people feel that they have very low energy, what types of things would help to increase their ATP levels?
Well, once again, you have to, you know, in the model I come from the integrative model, you have to look on multiple levels. I mean, the first fundamental thing is to get your hydration levels up, okay? So that's number one. A lot of people are continually dehydrated. So simple formulas that go like that is take your body weight divided by 2, and that's how many ounces of water you should drink a day. But and the trick with drinking water is don't try to chug it down. I have to get my, you know, 70 ounces of water in. You know, you sip the water all day because, once again, the water is the solvent. You start to detoxify. Second of all, you know, start getting your gut functioning properly. You know, start your detoxification. A lot of times these fibromyalgia, these chronic fatigue issues, is really a matter of toxicity built up in the body. There are pathways of what we call elimination to get rid of things is not functioning right. And, well, what is that pathways of elimination? Well, fundamental things. You have to poop things out. You have to pee them out. You breathe it out, and you sweat it out. So one of the fundamental things is make sure you're peeing and pooping correctly and at least once a day, and things will start to flow a little bit. So those are fundamental concepts. And once again, going back to the things we spoke about earlier, simple things like, you know, probiotics. Once again, you know, I learned years ago from Dr. Majid Ali, you know, the, one of the fathers of integrative medicine, you know, the GI tract is like a beautiful lawn you have to go. You have to weed, feed, and seed the lawn. And because where does our immune system live? Our immune system lives in the GI tract. So fundamental things of hydration, you know, nurturing the GI tract are just fundamental ways to start at least on the pathway to get, you know, upregulating your aches and pains, getting rid of those, and also getting some energy going. And then, you know, once again, it rolls back to good nutrition, good sound, foundational nutrition, and then thinking about other pathways of detoxification, getting the toxins out of your body.
To go back to if there's some tooth decay and you're going to use ozone to sterilize and change the environment there, what type of ozone would you be using? Would you be using the ozonated water or the gas? And if you're using a gas, are you going to use a tray or are you going to use a wand?
So basically, I mean, first thing, you know, let's say, you know, you have decay right there. You would wash it with ozonated water, get rid of the biofilm and start that process. And then you would actually take basically wand or handpiece or even a syringe with ozone and then blanket that tooth. And it's a process where we use a certain what's called microgram or dose of ozone, and then we expose the tooth to that for approximately 60 seconds, and that usually arrests the decay. And if not, we retreat it twice. With treating it twice, that definitely arrests the decay. And then the environment's changed and allows for remineralization. Go ahead.
So if you're going to use the if you're going to use the wand, then you have the wand right next to the area of decay, and then you have a suction next to it.
Yes. We always have ventilation, a small suction, and the flow rate that we expose the tooth to. You know, it's interesting. One of the things we teach is that, you know, it's not the volume of gas that does these things. It's just creating that little niche in that area. So we'll always take something, even we do, let's say, a syringe or a wand. We'll only, you know, have a quarter liter flow per minute, very, very low flow. But we maintain that environment over top of the tooth for approximately 60 seconds. And we do have, of course, the saliva ejector, the vacuum system, right next to it to take any off-gassing away from the tooth itself.
And so the difficult part in all of this is finding a dentist who does ozone therapy.
So, correct.
How many would you speculate there are in the U.S. right now?
Right now, we've probably trained over the last 10 years, probably over 1,000 dentists. We've spoken to thousands, but the ones we've physically trained, probably over 1,000 dentists throughout the country right now. And, you know, a number more throughout the world. We've traveled around Europe, South America, Canada. We've trained, you know, all over the world dentists at this point.
Mm-hmm. I did find a dentist in my area who does ozone, and they do have they use the wand for it. But they said that if they were to use the ozone on the spot of active decay, you know, the decay would just come back in a little while because it's just the mouth is a place of the way that they did it was that they would use the ozone, sterilize it, and then they would drill it, and then they would put in some type of filling.
Right.
And
listen, once again, this is what's called clinical judgment. Listen, the reality is if you have a small, what's called incipient decay, a small spot of initial decay, you ozonate it, you'll see remineralization. But once again, you know, you have to use your judgment. You have an area that's totally decayed out, it has a structural issue. Yeah, you know, you go there, you have to do your dentistry. You have to prepare the tooth properly. But the beauty of it is that, once again, once you're done with that, you ozonate it, you have a nice, clean, sterile surface in which to put the filling in, and it really prevents recurrent issues down the road. So once again, it's clinical judgment. This doesn't take drilling and filling off the table, but it makes it a lot more effective. Post-operative sensitivity, which we all love after filling, is dramatically reduced.
Mm. To get back to a question that I had asked you right when the caller had called and then we got disconnected, I had asked about the ozone blocking the dentinal tubules. This has to do with the sensitive teeth, and you were about to tell me something about that.
Right. Like I said, we had a meeting in Dallas, and a good friend of mine, Charles Rufinek, had discussed the issue of desensitization. It's amazing how wonderful ozone is on those little exposed roots that people suffer with, cold teeth. They drink something cold, they couldn't get that wincing, like, oh, that's killing me. And we're trying to discuss and try to think about, you know, what, you know, allows the ozone to desensitize it. All you have to do with these sensitive roots, expose exposed area to ozone for approximately 60 seconds. The way I do it is I have the patient take a little rinse, get that little special feeling. I expose the exposed area approximately 60 seconds of ozone. I have them rinse again. If it's desensitized, fantastic, we're done. Otherwise, I'll retreat it. What we feel is happening, and number one, is any kind of bacteria, any kind of pathogen form that's in these tubules, once again, we're oxidizing. A lot of peroxides are formed. But we're allowing, you know, desensitization of what's called the odontoblast, those little tubules that have cells in them. You know, we're desensitizing those nerve endings there and then allowing for remineralization of the tubules themselves. So do we know exactly what's happening? No. Do we know that the teeth are desensitized? Absolutely. So we're all guessing as to what it is. But the amazing thing is, you know what? It works.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the work of Ralph Steadman or Steinman and John Leonora? They did the work on dentinal fluid transport.
Yeah, on the fluidity of in the dental tubules themselves.
Yeah, and they thought that it was there was a hormonally influenced systemic mechanism of active carry resistance, and that it had to do with a hydrostatic pressure of the fluid pushing out through the teeth, and that there were certain things hormonally that would cause the fluid to reverse directions and pull bacteria that's in the mouth into the teeth instead of pushing dentinal fluid out of the teeth.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing about that is that, their theory and a couple of theories is that, you know, the fluids work in the opposite way you would think. With the cold exposure, you would think that the fluids would contract into the tooth, but they've been showing that it actually goes in the opposite direction.
Oh.
Now, whether it's hormonally controlled or not, that I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But this comfort component is really, in the fundamental way, the fluid dynamics.
Mm.
You know, the flowing of the fluid, whether it's in, out, hormonally controlled. You know what? It's temperature controlled, obviously. And the discomfort comes when the fluids are moving around and moving back and forth in the dental tubules. And as far as the dental tubules, on the inside of the tooth, there's a thing called an odontoblast, which is kind of a dentin-forming cell. And it's those extensions from that cell all the way out to that root surface. That's where that fluid dynamic comes in. So it's interesting. Whether it's hormone-controlled or not, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, you know what? You drink something cold, it gives you this special feeling.
Going on to other dentists and their theories, Weston Price and his theory about nutrition and dental health, one thing that he seemed to be very strongly in favor of was cod liver oil. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, with cod liver oil, or you're talking about essential fatty acids, oils in general, are critical. Well, why are they critical? Well, you know, it's cod liver oil, flaxseed oil combinations, different oils. Essentially, you know, these oils are what we're made up of. Our cell membranes, our constituent components are made of what's called phospholipids. So when you bring these oils into our system, number one, this is what we're made of. You know, it's kind of, you know, the old story, you know, you are what you eat. And that is the reality of it. So when, you know, when Weston Price was talking about bringing these fundamental oils into the system, he was talking about how we build the cells and from the cells, how we build our cells. So that's why we're much more aware of using certain fish oils, krill oils, you know, plant oils, you know, olive oil, coconut oil. These different oils have, you know, significance as far as us structuring our cells. And, you know, Weston Price, you know, looked at, you know, different structures, you know, how the mouth and the face and the jaws changed based on dietary intake over generations. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. There's also dentist Melvin Page. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he took all of his patients that and put them on a graph and took all the people that had from the most tooth decay to the least tooth decay, and then he checked their calcium to phosphorus ratios in their blood. And he charted that graph, and there was a certain ratio of calcium to phosphorus in the blood where he found that if you could get it to that place, that the people wouldn't get tooth decay. And has your work, you know, brought you across any information that relates to blood calcium to phosphorus ratios?
Yeah, well, you know what? Once again, we're talking about, you know, alkalinization. You know, ecology, when you get in those ratios, when you're talking about the phosphate, the calcium, you're talking how it's reflecting in the oral cavity as far as the capabilities of localized remineralization and as far as the pH of the oral cavity. You know, that's a reflection of what's going on environmentally there. So you see those little ratios going back and forth. And once again, it's the availability, bioavailability of those minerals to allow for those microscopic remineralizations to occur within the dentition itself. And once again, it trickles back to, once again, how the patient functions and what their nutrition is like.
Have you seen in your practice anyone who's had active decay that's reversed before you got into using the ozone therapy?
Active decay that's reversed?
I guess
not really.
And then that would be... Would that form secondary dentin if you had decay and it got as deep as the dentin and then it remineralized?
Well, listen, yeah. I mean, you're going to get secondary dentin formation if you have an insult to the tooth, okay? And, you know, whether you reverse the decay, arrest it, or mechanically go in there and remove it, and, you know, a resultant of that is, you know, secondary dentin, which is kind of like almost a dental scar in a way, as a reflection of that insult to the tooth itself. So, you know, on the histologic end, you know, clinically, I mean, what you're going to see, you're going to look at, okay, is the patient fine? Are they asymptomatic? Is the tooth healthy and vital? But, you know, we know scientifically, yes, as a result of that insult, whether it's infective or mechanical, you're going to get secondary dentin formation. At least you hope so. That will, you know, be a representative of health of the tooth.
What are the current theories on the causes of receding gums?
Well, it's a multiplicity. Number one, it could be strictly an infective issue, you know, where we losing, you know, the infection, once again, is, you know, causing the loss of the bone or its structure, the supporting structure, excuse me, around the tooth itself. And also it could be functional, meaning that the mechanics of the teeth, the clenching, the grinding, the bad, you know, way the patient bites together, can create situations where your gums will actually peel away. You know, you see these little tiny grooves and flaking around the gum line, and we traditionally thought, wow, they must be brushing too hard. Well, you know what? The reality is that by bad bites and clenching and grinding, tensile strands start to form at the gum line, and the tooth actually flakes off from that pressure.
Wow.
And that would strip the gums down.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk just a little bit about bisphosphonate?
Well, that's one of my little favorites, bisphosphonate, because it is scary as it can be. What has happened with the concept of bisphosphonate, and people, you know, would know bisphosphonates more as Boniva, Vazimax, you know, Sally Field on TV saying she wants to live forever on bisphosphonates. Bisphosphonates are a type of drug that they're using now to slow down the process of osteoporosis. And this was originally developed as a chemotherapy agent for the invasion of cancers in the bone. Well, this is an off-label use that they saw that bone would become denser by using this type of drug, and wow, this would be fantastic for osteoporosis. Well, it's kind of a fake-out in a way, in the sense that what bisphosphonates do, there are two type of bone cells, ones that make bone and ones that take away bone. What bisphosphonates do, they salt the bone, they have a great adherence to bone itself. And when the cells come in that take away bone to allow new bone formation, those are literally poisoned. So what happens is that the bone cells that are in the bone, that, you know, their job is, you know, make bone, make bone, make bone, they're never relieved. It's like, you know, putting a player into a football game and you never take the poor guy out. All he knows is he's got to play football until he drops dead. Mm-hmm. Well, in this case, those poor cells can't be relieved and the bone becomes thicker, thicker, thicker over time. And you become brittle old bone. So basically you're taking ecologically half the population of your normal physiology of bone out of play and giving this sense of condensed bone. The result, unfortunately, is bone success.
Oh, I was going to say, didn't you say that bisphosphonate was originally a chemotherapeutic agent?
Correct. Using chemotherapy to start, reducing, theoretically, reducing the invasive capability of cancer in the bone. Their theory was, well, make the bone thicker so the cancer doesn't spread into the bone as readily. And with cancer patients today, they're still using the IV form, Zometa, to do that. In addition, they're offering it to patients now called Reclass. You know, you get one IV a year and your bones are good for another year. So, but the problem with this type of drug is that it accumulates. It's something that keeps building up. And what we've seen now with these large jaw deaths, these bone lesions in the jaw, are women that unfortunately are on drugs like Fosamax for 5, 10, 15 years at this particular point. What we're seeing clinically throughout the whole body is spontaneous fractures of the leg and backs. Because the bone becomes old and brittle. It can't heal and turn itself over.
How do people find a dentist who practices with ozone?
Well, they can call my office or go on the American Academy of Ozone Therapy site. There are dentists there that we have certified, and that's probably the best bet, is go on the AAOT.us site, and there's a list of dentists there that we have trained and we have certified through testing and their levels of skill. That's the best. American Academy of Ozone Therapy. And you'll see a list of dentists that are certified that are very competent to treat you.
Now, I hear about people using chewing gum that has xylitol in it. Would you
right.
like to comment on that?
Well, xylitol is an interesting type of an alcohol that has a sweet taste to it. And this is the popular thing right now. And xylitol gum. A friend of mine, Chris Edwards, a dentist down in Florida, is making xylitol chocolates, and this has the capability of reducing down decay. It has a very positive effect as far as getting rid of the type of bacteria that cause decay, and it has, you know, no toxicity or side effects. So xylitol, in its multiplicity of forms, is great. I mean, it's actually the, you know, the one kind of gum you can chew, and you really do have a positive effect on your oral cavity from there. So it's one of those wonderful little things that becoming more and more popular in dentistry today as far as, you know, different type of product lines that you will see with the xylitol. So it's a good thing that it changes the ecology of the mouth that's more favorable to health versus decay.
Is there any benefit to just increasing salivary flow in general in the mouth for dental health?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, if you can't, I mean, your body's going to do what it's going to do. But once again, I mean, as far as salivary flow, it's important because, once again, saliva is very alkaline, you know, alkaline in nature. It tends to keep the acids down. But, you know, gunning back, you have to have good hydration. You're not going to get good salivary flow unless you have good hydration. And one of our biggest problems is that we have patients that have restricted salivary flow, whether from radiation therapy, you know, different type of pharmaceutical agents. And then once we see where, you know, salivary flow starts to diminish off, we start to see an increase in periodontal and decay disease.
What about peroxide as compared to ozone? Is there any benefit to peroxide, food-grade peroxide?
Well, what happens, interesting enough, when ozone is introduced into the body itself, the ozone comes and goes very quickly, and the byproduct is peroxides and the multiplicity of naturally produced peroxides. What you have to be careful is with when you're talking about food-grade peroxides, sometimes they're 12%, sometimes 30%. Those will burn you if you don't dramatically, dilute those. So you have to be extremely, extremely careful. Now, if you take your typical 3% peroxide, and people love to rinse with peroxide, you know, it's an old traditional model of taking baking soda and peroxide. This is fundamental stuff. I mean, oxygenation and alkalinization, the old peroxide and baking soda toothpaste. The thing about, you know, people rinsing a lot with peroxide is it tends to dry or pull fluid out of the tissue itself. So peroxide is great, but once again, everything in moderation, and you got to be careful, you know, because we talk about food grade or commercial grade peroxide. Always check what percentage you have, because I'm telling you what, 12 or 30% peroxide will burn you badly. It's super, super alkaline, so you got to be careful.
I had written down ischemic disease, and it must have been something from your lecture, and I don't remember what the what the context was.
What was the disease, ischemic? What?
Ischemic.
Oh, ischemic? Oh, ischemic. Oh, okay. Yeah, ischemic means lack of blood flow. Ischemic osteonecrosis, I think you're referring to.
Okay.
A lack of blood flow. And that's one of the fundamental problems that we find in old extraction sites or infection in the bone. Once again, it boils back to, once the infection takes hold or the extraction didn't really heal correctly, we're not getting blood flow into the area that allows healing. And this is, once again, where ozone comes into play, where, once again, with these areas of ischemia or lack of blood flow, it opens up all those vascular beds because of the nitric oxide formation, and then, once again, allows for the healing process to occur in those ischemic diseased areas.
And my last question for you is, have you heard of the use of LIPUS, which is a low-intensity pulsed ultrasound? It's being used experimentally now in Canada to regenerate damaged pulp and damaged dentin in the teeth.
Yeah, I haven't heard too much of that. I mean, it's still in the early experimental phase. And, this goes into the along the lines of using different, laser wavelengths. And basically what's going on is you're fundamental stimulating the body's natural healing processes, getting better blood flow into the area, and stimulating the immune system using those techniques. Mm. Once again, all these fundamental processes, when you get down to them, if they support the patient's own healing processes, and that's kind of a different way of thinking, how can we help the patient heal themselves? And that's really the key to longevity and wellness.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us this morning.
Glad to do it.
Take care.
All right, bye now.
Bye.